Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Hunneke. We're joined this week by former Secretaries of Agriculture Dan Glickman and Mike Johanns, who talk about the current situation involving trade and tariffs, as well as some of the other major stories impacting agriculture across the country. But first, here are this week's headlines. USDA is forecasting a sharp increase in net farm income this year, largely due to an infusion of government payments. Net farm income, which is a broad measure of profits, is forecast at $180.1 billion for 2025. That's an increase of nearly 30%, or $41 billion from 2024. Farmers are expected to collect more than $42 billion in government payments this year, largely because of an aid package passed by Congress in December. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is headed toward Senate confirmation as Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. The Senate Finance Committee approved his nomination on a party-line vote this week. Kennedy continues to push for farmers to move towards regenerative farming practices. Many ag economists are still concerned about his nomination. A recent survey by Farm Journal showed 90% of those surveys said his selection to lead HHS was not positive for American agriculture. And finally, President Trump has imposed tariffs on Chinese imports, and China has responded with retaliatory tariffs that go into effect next week on agricultural equipment. As of now, commodities are not included in the retaliatory tariffs. Instead, China will adopt 15% tariffs on American coal and natural gas, as well as a 10% tariff on crude oil, machinery, and certain vehicles. Meanwhile, the president has temporarily suspended 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico until March 1st. Trump said Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau have both committed to strengthening U.S. border security. It's still unclear whether Trump will move forward with the originally proposed tariffs at the beginning of next month. He's also hinted at possible tariffs on the European Union. Dan Glickman was the Secretary of Agriculture during the Clinton administration. We asked him if commodities could end up becoming involved in retaliatory tariffs from China.
It could, and if it does, it would have a really bad impact, especially combined with Mexico and Canada. Let's just hope that better minds and softer thinking prevails. And I know the president is either talked to or is going to talk to Xi fairly soon. But these extra tariffs look like they just, I'm not sure why they did it, why we did it, to be honest with you. We already did the one. And, you know, I mean, I guess the fentanyl thing is the primary reason for it. But, you know, it's this crazy thing about using tariffs to deal with non-tariff issues. That's what we've gotten, and certainly in this case and in the Canadian case. And that is a new thing. And that makes trade very vulnerable if you can put tariffs on somebody because you don't like their behavior.
And I do want to move on to those Canada and Mexico tariffs that you just mentioned there. For now, those are suspended until March 1st. We know many commodities, fruits, grains, dairy products will be impacted by those tariffs if they do end up going into place. What do you see happening on this front? And can you explain more about the ramifications of these tariffs?
Well, first of all, the Canadian tariffs are crazy. I mean, the Canadians don't bring any fentanyl into this country. And in terms of the immigration issue, they're an insignificant factor in that. And so, you know, they're really one of our closest friends. You don't treat allies like that. I mean, Ronald Reagan talked about that many years ago. You don't treat allies in a way that's hostile and unnecessarily negative to them. So, yeah, look, it could impact us really with respect to energy, because we impact a huge amount of crude oil, and that could affect all sorts of energy prices, including diesel products. Potash, I don't know if potash is on the list or not, but, you know, with Ukraine kind of was a big potash supplier. Now we have Canada. That could impact farmers as well. You know, I mean, and then, of course, meat products, all sorts of processed products come in from Canada. This is really dumb, to be honest with you. Maybe they felt like they had to include Canada because they put Mexico in there on both sides of the border. I'm not sure why, but Canada is a really real ally of the United States. This makes no sense at all.
What is your message to those farmers who are concerned that those tariffs could start another trade war?
I would say you ought to be concerned, and you ought to fight this. And agriculture really didn't fight strongly the tariffs on China a few years back. but they need to really fight this. The farm groups I see are beginning to speak out a bit, which is healthy. But, you know, when you look at rural America and farms, these were a big part of the Trump base. In my own state of Kansas, he won a lot of our rural counties, like 8-1, 9-1, 6-1. And so these people had a big part to do with his election. Farmers had a huge part in Trump's election. They need to speak out and tell him they do not like this.
We'll be back with more from Dan Glickman right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who helped build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Elon Musk is impacting the government with his mission to cut government spending. The U.S. Agency for International Development is now effectively shut down. We asked Dan Glickman why the public or farmers should be concerned about that.
Well, first of all, Elon Musk wasn't elected to anything. And I think it's great that he did Tesla and SpaceX, and he's an interesting entrepreneur, but I don't know the guy, and it's incontrovertible that he's inconsistent with American democracy. You don't bring in some third-rate business guy, although he's a very rich man, clearly, and give him powers that are not constitutionally granted or not granted by Congress. And second of all, I'm very concerned about him. But the one positive thing is one of these days Trump's going to wake up and realize that Musk is more powerful than he is, and he can't let that happen. So I don't see Musk's power lasting forever, to be honest with you. I think he will be a competitive force to the president. The president won't like this at all. But his views on things like the USAID, that's important for America's power and role in national security. Regardless of what you think about the agency, you can't just shut it down. They've been appropriated by Congress. Congress needs to assert itself, which they haven't really done. But he's talking about doing away with the Department of Education. You know, they talked about the freeze before, about letting all federal employees go or giving them a buyout at some point in time. You know, they're talking about a buyout for federal employees through the end of September. Well, we don't have the government funded through the end of September. It's only funded through next month.
I'd like to get your thoughts on Robert F. Kennedy Jr. next. You know, his confirmation is the next head of the Department of Health and Human Services. That's continuing to move along here now in the Senate. Do you have any concerns over how he will impact agriculture?
A lot of concerns. You know, I mean, I think some of his ideas on a healthier diet are good, actually. You know, we're too obese. We have mortality rates that are higher than a lot of other countries in the world. A lot of that is tied to food. So I understand that. But I have great concerns about him not feeling science is an important lever in determining what we should eat or not eat. Or, you know, I mean, I think that his science is pseudoscience. The other thing is that this is an agency that runs our Social Security, our Medicare, our Medicaid program. It's 60% of the federal government. I don't think he's ever run anything of any scope or size. So I look at his, and his views on vaccine are not based on science. So I think he's trouble. You know, again, fortunately, we have forces in the private sector and in Congress that will deal with him. But I don't think he likes farm programs either. Everything I've seen indicates that he's not really a fan of them. So he's going to have to be restrained if he gets into that job.
I'd also like your thoughts on Brooke Rollins, her confirmation process also moving along as the Secretary of Agriculture. Do you have any advice for her?
Well, first of all, I watched her confirmation hearings. I thought she did a nice job. And I think she is, excuse my language, I think she is one of the more normal nominees for cabinet positions that the president has appointed. So, you know, she's got some experience. She's a 4-H'er. She went to Texas A&M or has a relationship there. I think the big part of this is to listen. You know, the department does a lot of things. It does farm programs. but it also has huge federal nutrition programs, food safety programs, conservation programs, just a myriad of activities. Get to know all those programs. And also the second thing is there are great employees at USDA, great career employees. And, you know, the way the administration is treating career employees in our government is disgraceful. Most of these people work very hard. Farmers have to deal with the USDA all the time and generally have a good feeling about that. They know that the employees are doing their best under the circumstances. And therefore, she needs to make friends of the career employees in the department. They are the heart of USDA.
With all this going on, there's still a farm bill that needs to get done. Do you expect some to get done at any point this year?
I certainly hope so. I know that Senator Bozeman wants to get a farm bill done. You have Congresswoman Craig is new in terms of ranking member, on the committee. And Senator Klobuchar is now much more involved. So you have people who may be able to work things out. But, look, this is not rocket science to work this farm bill out. There are some differences on the federal nutrition program. I think they can be resolved. And a few differences on the conservation programs. We can't just throw out all climate stuff out, as the climate smart agriculture was a hallmark of the Vilsack administration. And I think he did a good job with that. And climate still remains a problem as well. So I think we can get it done. But I tell you what, if we can't get it done this year, there's a good chance we'll never get a farm bill again. We'll go year to year and we'll kind of ad hoc, and farmers won't have the certainty of having a farm bill.
Mr. Glickman, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you.
We'll be back with our interview with Mike Johanns, but first, Lydia Johnson has a look at how Chinese tariffs may impact U.S. ag exports in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
China is a major market for U.S. soybean exports, which make up more than half of the $29 billion in U.S. ag exports to the country. Commodity exporters have been concerned that return tariff escalations could mean a return to rising Chinese tariffs on U.S. commodities and reduced U.S. sales to the country. Beyond China, President Donald Trump had threatened a 25% tariff on goods entering the U.S. from Mexico and Canada. However, he rescinded the proposals a couple days later after speaking with leaders from both countries to secure their commitments to improve border security. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
President Trump has suspended tariffs on Canada and Mexico until March 1st, but there's still a lot of uncertainty in farm country. We asked Mike Johanns, who was Secretary of Agriculture under the Bush administration, what he thinks about the president's strategy involving those tariffs.
Well, these are two very, very large trading partners. So anytime you talk about tariffs with Mexico and Canada, you begin to realize that's going to have an effect here in the United States, because as I always say, there's two words that go together in trade. One is tariffs and the other one is retaliation. You can just guarantee that whatever we do, they're going to respond, and they have shown that already. However, there are some things that need to be done here. The playing field has not been level for a long period of time. So President Trump stepping forward and saying, look, we have to have a better agreement than what we have is absolutely appropriate. And I just noticed within the last hours that Mexico has lifted the ban on corn that they had in place. So what's happening? They're starting to respond and say, look, we can do some things and improve this situation. So To me, that's encouraging.
What is your message to farmers who are still concerned that there could be a trade war that comes out of all of this?
I share the concern. I mean, no doubt about it. Farmers know that we need a foreign marketplace for for what we raise in this country. We have this unbelievable situation where American agriculture is just more productive than what we can consume in this country. So I share their concern. But talking to farmers, what they're saying is, look, we understand that there has to be a more level playing field. Give us a level playing field and we can compete. So President Trump trying to do some things in this area has actually been received pretty well out in farm country and ranch country.
I'd like to get your thoughts now on the retaliatory tariffs that you were mentioning, this time on China, though, that China's imposing on the U.S. Those are going to go into effect next week. That's on farm machinery. Do you think these could escalate to involving commodities at some point?
Well, that's the worry. Although I will tell you this, China has been moving some of their major purchases, for example, soybeans, to Brazil. So this has been a concern for a long time for me. That's a trading relationship that has really, really big numbers behind it. China's a big buyer of soybeans especially, but other commodities in the United States. The overall trade imbalance is not good. It favors China, but in agriculture, we've really done quite well. Again, level playing field, I have no doubt that our farmers and ranchers can compete. But yes, of course, I'm concerned because even though it's on machinery now, there's no reason why it can't expand to other areas.
We'll be back with more from Mike Johanns right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Welcome back. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is one step closer to taking over as Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. We asked Mike Johanns about the impact RFK will have on agriculture.
Hopefully he'll stay at Health and Human Services and they'll leave agriculture alone. We have a wonderful person that's been nominated, will soon be confirmed to be Secretary of Agriculture. So what I would say to Robert Kennedy is you have your department, stay over there. Ag is being led or will be led by a really outstanding person in Brooke Rollins.
Yeah, let's talk more about Brooke, her confirmation process, also moving along in the Senate. From your prior experience, what do you think is going to end up being the biggest challenge for her?
Well, I've been giving speeches on what she can expect the first day in the job, and I would tell you it's a long list. It's tariffs, it's farm bill, it's avian influenza. There is no lack of challenges facing her. I would say top of the list is she's got to figure out what's going to happen with the farm bill. That's front and center for people in agriculture. Avian influenza becomes more concerning by the week. It's spreading, you know, we see it in dairy herds. We've now seen it in humans. That's concerning to me, and we need to get a handle on that. And right now, we don't have that. It's kind of spinning out of control. It reminds me of my first day, my first meeting at the USDA was with BSE. Mad cow disease. So disease is just a huge issue, and she knows it, but she's going to have to address that.
I'd like to get your thoughts as well on Elon Musk. He's having a big impact across the government with his mission to cut government spending. the U.S. Agency for International Development, effectively shut down now. Are you concerned about the impact of that on international food aid?
Well, international food aid and agriculture have worked together pretty well through the years for obvious reasons. The United States grows food. If there's a need for food around the world, we want our food to be used. I do believe that reform is necessary there. I don't see much debate about that, actually. I've got a lot of confidence in Secretary of State Marco Rubio. We serve together in the United States Senate. He knows what he's doing. He's a bright guy. He's the acting director now. So what he needs to do is get his arms around that and get some problems fixed there. So, but you're right. For the time being, it's basically shut down.
And with all this going on, there is still a farm bill that needs to get written. Do you expect anything to be written up this year or end up passing? Do you expect a bill at any point?
Hope springs eternal. I've been talking about the farm bill just like everybody else for the last 2 years. We're now in a second extension, but the differences still remain. Tremendous amount of this farm bill does go into the nutrition programs, about 82%. Democrats don't want a single dollar cut out of those programs. Republicans are saying, you know, it's time to put more farm into the farm bill. So there's a lot of difference of opinion here. At the end of the day, here's the challenge with the farm bill. I don't believe you can do a farm bill with reconciliation. That means you need a majority vote in the House, and you need 60 votes in the Senate. Boy, that's hard to come by these days. Tremendous difference of opinion between the two sides and what this farm bill should look like. So if they start today, it won't be too early to try to get this done this year.
Well, Mr. Johanns, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Anytime. Thank you.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Lydia Johnson has a look at SNAP program payments by state in this week's Map It Out.
House Republicans are looking for hundreds of billions of dollars of spending cuts and budget reconciliation. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program could be one of many programs facing cuts, despite resistance from hundreds of members of Congress. The SNAP program accounts for about 80% of funding in the Farm Bill. That totals over $100 billion in spending over 10 years to help struggling families put food on the table. It serves more than 40 million people who receive about $200 in assistance per month per person. As you can see on this chart, SNAP benefits by state vary depending on population and program participation. California residents receive the most, totaling more than 12% of annual payments. Texas, Florida, and New York receive between 6 and 8% each. Some states in the Midwest and West, including Iowa, Colorado, and Nebraska, among others, receive the least at less than 1% of SNAP benefits per state. Iowa Republicans, Representative Randy Feenstra, and Senate Department of Government Efficiency Caucus Chair Senator Joni Ernst introduced a bill last week targeting federal savings in the SNAP program by directing states, which administer the program, to stop overpayments. House Ag Committee Chair Glenn Thompson also indicated he wants to look at ways to save money by cracking down on SNAP program errors without taking away benefits from those who qualify. USDA data shows more than 11% SNAP program error rate in fiscal 2023, totaling $10 billion in overpayments. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Elevate your game and set your sights on Denver for the 2025 Commodity Classic. With technology that moves faster than fluctuating markets and information as important as a million-dollar rain, Commodity Classic is designed for growers of all kinds, where you'll broaden your horizons as you improve yield and ROI one bushel at a time. Take your operation to new heights and join us for Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks for joining us on this week's AgriPulse Newsmakers. Here's what's on the horizon for next week. The next Consumer Price Index is released Wednesday. and the House Ag Committee has a meeting Tuesday on the economic crisis in farm country. We'll also continue to follow the latest on the confirmation process of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Brooke Rollins on our website, agripulse.com. You can also still register on the website for our upcoming AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit on March 17th. Early bird rates are available through February 17th. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is agripulse.com.